From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? You really want to do that and find out about my carnivore highs and lows, as well as seeing what delicious meats I have hauled home this week. Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's extraordinary women are Tracy Kimberly and her daughter Ashley, together with Ashley's doctor, Dr. Jodie Stanislaw. Tracy is a mother of four. Ashley was born on New Year's Eve 2004 and was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes on the 25th of August 2016. They had a horrible first 18 months with no help or guidance and even got abuse from some specialists. After watching Dr. Jodie on YouTube and her interview with Mike Mutzel, Tracy and Ashley knew they had to contact this amazing lady and learn from her. A year later, after working with Dr. Jodie, they finally got to meet her in Denver at the Low Carb Denver conference. Dr. Jodie Stanislaw received her doctorate in naturopathic medicine in 2007. She is a certified diabetes educator and a type 1 diabetes specialist. Having lived with type 1 diabetes since the age of 7, she has dedicated her career to helping others with type 1. From her 30 plus years of experience, she teaches life-changing information about how to successfully manage type 1 that most patients have never learned, and also supports patients with diet, exercise, emotional health, as well as overall well-being. Patients from over 30 states and 10 countries have had transformational experiences with her via her virtual practice, yet there are millions around the world still struggling. To tackle this gap, she has created the first ever type 1 diabetes virtual training course, covering what to eat and how to dose, how to get off the blood sugar roller coaster, how to master blood sugar and exercise, and how to stay positive and avoid burnout. To learn about this and how to work with Dr. Jodie, visit drjodiend.com. You will obviously also be able to find all the details you need in this week's show notes as usual. Tracy and I have been trying to coordinate a recording time and figure out equipment issues since last year. When we realised that we would both be at Low Carb Denver, we seized the opportunity to record together. Even better though, we got to record with Tracy's daughter, Ashley, who is at the centre of the story, together with her doctor, Jodie Stanislaw. What a coup! It took a bit of juggling with equipment, with Tracy and I sharing a mic, and then some serious editing skills. But hey, I'm a pro now, right? I hope you enjoy our get-together. Welcome to a very special edition of Keto Women Podcast. I have here with me today, not one guest, but three. Ash.
Hi.
Tracy and Jodie. Welcome to the Keto Women Podcast. How are you all doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Wonderful to be here. Nice to meet you.
I'm feeling awesome.
And Ash is my youngest ever extraordinary woman on the podcast. So we're here really to talk mostly about you. So let's hear from you. Tell me a bit about you, your story.
Well, my name is Ashley. I am a type 1 diabetic and I have been for 2.5 years. I am eating keto, which is low carb. We started a bit before I was diagnosed, except it wasn't completely keto. A few meals we had every now and then were keto. But we really started doing the real low carb 1 month after I was diagnosed.
And you enjoy eating this way?
Yes, because we can have alternatives for different foods and meals and yeah.
I just had a squiz at the contents of your fridge and you got quite a few tasty looking things in there.
Yes, they are very yummy.
So let's hear a bit from Mum and just elaborate a bit on the story and, you know, how it all came about. Must have been very worrying for you, the diagnosis and the treatment and what's been happening.
Well, Ash was diagnosed on the 25th of August, 2016. She was sick leading up to it. She actually was sick. She had chickenpox about maybe 2 months before that. She seemed to have got better from that. And then a couple of weeks before that, she sort of just was a bit lethargic, not feeling very well. So I packed the kids up and went up to Queensland, which is nice and sunny. And I thought, we've just got to get away from this cold, yuck winter. We went away. Everything was fine. When we came back, I started to notice little differences and I thought they were girly hormones because we'd just cry over something or we'd do something. Never in my wildest dreams would I have thought that this was signs of type 1 diabetes. But looking back now, there were signs. It came to a couple of days. It was about a Thursday. She had a year 7 orientation. She was fine. She was happy. She was great. By Saturday morning, she was starting to not feel great. And I thought, we've just had a big week. Have a sleep. She slept all day again Sunday. By Monday, she was, Mum, I'm not really well. And I thought, something not right here. Like, you're never really this sick. So I booked a doctor's appointment for Wednesday because that's all I could get in, never thinking we should rush this. By Tuesday afternoon, she wasn't crash hot. She wasn't really talking to me. I'd have to say her name very clearly, like Ashley, and she'd wake up and she'd look at me. And fortunate enough, my husband is in Army Reserves. He came home that night on the Wednesday night, thank goodness. And we were just sort of sitting chatting in bed about what he'd been up to. And she got up to go to the bathroom and she missed the bathroom because this is a sign of, because you drink so much water when you're in the state of being diagnosed for type 1. And she missed the bathroom because she was unaware also too, because her bloods were probably sky high. By Thursday morning when we woke up, her breathing was odd. I cannot explain to you what it was like to listen to her breathing. Her eyes were rolling in the back of her head when I was speaking to her. So my first thoughts were going through like she's got meningococcal meningitis. Diabetes just never, we didn't know anyone with diabetes. I had never come across. We don't even have type 2 diagnosed at that stage in our family. We rushed her up to the GP because we'd had that appointment, thank goodness, that I made. However, he had no idea what he was looking at when we got there. And he said, I think you need to go to the hospital. And I said, well, if you don't know, we need to go find somebody that does. And off we went to the hospital driving. I kept saying her name to her as we were in the car because I was so scared because she was sort of passing in and out. We got to the hospital and it was just very thankful that the nurse behind the counter knew what she was looking at. And she goes, is she a diabetic? And I went, I don't know. She yelled out she needed a glucometer and it came quickly. She pricked her and the next minute there was a bed. Ashley's thrown on a bed and she's being rushed up the hallway. Pete's grabbed the other two kids. Lucky he's like 6'5" and he's got these kids under his arm and we're just running after Ashley. And I was sitting in this room with about 9 to 12 doctors and nurses. She had tubes coming out of everywhere. machines were beeping and buzzing, tests were going on, and I had no idea what was happening. People were going, she's a diabetic, and I went, what does that mean? The only thing I knew about diabetes was amputation of limbs. So, of course, so then I started panicking. And then after that, she got much better because we had insulin and things like that. And then I had a dietitian come around and talk to me about the fact that now that Ashley has insulin and we know this beautiful thing that she was hiding from us, she has diabetes and now she's got it. She's got insulin. Everything's going to be fine because she can eat whatever she wants. She can have any. She can even have McDonald's. Oh, okay. And I stood there and thought, this is odd. McDonald's? She's the sickest child I have, but now you're telling me I can have McDonald's. So things like juice, jelly beans, chips, all this carbohydrate food started coming home because, well, one, I was told I needed it. And so you're taught so much about hypoglycemia events that you stress out about the thought of saying the word. So I had, you know, massive jars of jelly beans ready for these horrible events. Children doing meltdowns on the floor because, well, if Ashy gets one, we want one. And I was losing my mind because here is a mother trying to give nutrition to my children, having a type 1 diabetic and apparently needing these foods. So eventually after a horrible event where Ashley's glucose levels just dropped one night, I decided I needed to go back to my roots, which was food. And we started low carb, which was really good. We were doing really well until her HbA1c started going up. And I thought, well, what's going on here? What am I doing wrong? I've changed the food. Then I worked out after elimination and things that we don't actually know what insulin is. What is insulin? What does it do in the body? What does she need it for? And so many times I've been bullied by endocrinologists, laughed at by doctors, nurses, because why bother teaching me? I'm just a mum. You should just listen and do as you're told. I'm not that kind of person. This is my baby here. I need to know what's going on. For months and up to a year, I had no help, nothing, until my wonderful dad, bless him, he watches all his, I call them his keto gods, but he has these beautiful people that he watches and he's learnt so much for himself. He watched an episode with Mike Mutzel, who runs High Intensity Health, and it was on this wonderful type 1 diabetic specialist that he met, I think, in his father's town, and he did an interview with her. My dad, myself and Ashley, because dad had come down for Christmas, we sat on the couch and I think I had tears and I think my eyes almost popped out of my head, and Ashley just sat there and she goes, I want to talk to her. And I went, okay, let's make this happen. And I got straight on my phone. I booked in an appointment, a 20-minute get to know you session. And from then on, it's just been onwards and upwards because I met this fantastic, beautiful woman, Dr. Jody, who's just taught me, I mean, our first session was on the importance of basal insulin. My knees went weak. I'm sitting there, I'm looking at my husband, I'm going, oh my God, we're talking about insulin. I need to know this. And I was there with my pen and paper, like I was, you know, ready to go into university. I'm studying. And I still remember our first session together. It just gave me so much hope, but someone was teaching me. Someone was finally teaching me what my daughter was diagnosed. And I had this feeling of, I can actually be her mum again. For a whole year, I felt completely lost that I couldn't be her mum. But she was given to me. How can that be? How can I be given this beautiful child who's now going through this horrible thing, but I can't be a mum? So that's where we are, and we've now 18 months or almost 18 months, and we are all thriving. I'm a mum of 4 children now, to a type 1 diabetic, to the other 3, and we're bopping along. She's got a HbA1c now of 5.4, and I'm really proud of her. She's amazing.
Well, that's fantastic. There was something I just wanted to ask you about, just to go back a little bit. When you said going back to your roots and the food, and that's what you know about, and the low carb. So this is something that you'd been involved with before. You know, how did you know to go to that? What led you there?
When I was about 13, 14, I became anorexic. I was obsessed with food and wanting to be really healthy. I was into sport, and I went down a very dark path with food. More so it was just I wasn't eating enough. And after I was diagnosed, my father said to me, that's it, you're not swimming. And that was my life. Swimming was my absolute life. And I thought, well, I've got to get myself better. How am I going to get better? I've got to work out a relationship here with food. So I turned those horrible thoughts into a passion. And that's where I just myself have been learning what fuels me, what fuels my body. And I've done that for years and years and years. When I was 18, I was in a very stressful household. My mother was very stressful. I ended up getting sinus infection after sinus infection, and I then started researching and looking into natural medicine things. And so I combined my love of food and natural medicine, and I've just sort of always crisscrossed those paths on my own, just reading. I mean, YouTube is an absolute blessing. I love listening to podcasts, watching YouTube videos, because I can learn on my own accord. But 6 months before Ashley was diagnosed, my father started watching sugar videos, things about sugar. Then he put two and two together and, you know, oh my goodness, carbs are sugar. And we sat down together and worked out some recipes. I love to cook. I've always loved to cook since I was about seven. The kitchen and I, we're just best mates. And so he called me and he said, let's work out some recipes. So I started dabbling into what low carb foods was, what it meant, meals. And so I thought, this is great. I can incorporate it into our family. And so I started learning about low carb through more of a metabolic syndrome type 2 diabetic approach. But I just knew that night when I was really upset and I went back to my roots, I knew I needed to go back to food, because food has always been that really important part of me. I've always understood that.
Yeah, really interesting. And so to go now to the woman who it sounds like has had a major influence on your life, and I can see now listening to you talking about the way you like to learn and really drive your own knowledge and how that influences your life, and I can see how it really appealed to you to reach out to somebody like this. And I think we're going to have you back on a podcast, a separate podcast just of your own, to hear your story, because I bet that's going to be an interesting one. But for now, to just talk about your involvement with this family and the different things that go on. A lot of people, and we're here at the conference, and it's type 2 diabetes predominantly that gets talked about, and type 1 gets sort of left in the corner a little bit, although coming much more up to the forefront. You know, I've been talking about it with people like Jess Turton. There's a lot more research and an understanding about it in the low carb community, isn't there? So perhaps we could hear from you now then, Jodi.
Absolutely. So I'll just say my name again. My name is Dr. Jodi Stanislaw, and I was diagnosed with diabetes in 1980. So almost 40 years, which is surreal because I don't even feel 40. And I knew, the only diabetic I knew was at summer camp, because there was no internet. There was no connection with any other type 1. So it was very lonely. And once I became a teen, I started asking my doctor a lot more challenging questions. And I'll never forget the day that when I asked my doctor about blood sugar level with exercise, he just patted me on the knee and said, oh, it's too difficult for me to explain it to you. You would never understand. And I'm quite certain that he actually didn't know the answer. And that's what I realized, is that the majority, hands down, of family practice docs or just general medicine docs absolutely are not skilled to truly give a type 1 the care they need. But the sad thing is I've also found that many endocrinologists, who are supposed to be the experts in diabetes, many endocrinologists are also not adequately trained. And I just truly think that the training is not out there. I mean, I've been asked, you know, what textbook for type 1 did you use in med school? And I was like, oh, there's not a textbook. Everything I've learned is really from my own experimentation. There are a few other type 1 medical professionals that have written books, and they're just catered not to med schools, they're catered to patients. So all of us type 1s, we have that bond where as soon as, even if I see, you know, somebody wearing an insulin pump or a CGM in public, suddenly I'm like, hey, you know, so there's just a really deep bond. And I learned so many incredible, valuable things about how to get better blood sugar level just from my own experimentation over 20, 30 years that I went to med school. And I also am a very adventurous person, so I didn't want to be in a classic, you know, standard hospital job. So I created an online virtual practice, and I have patients in 10 countries and all over the U.S. And I'm so lucky that Tracy and Ashley found my video. It's truly a miracle. I mean, I was a little teary when you were telling the story, because this is my job, to help change lives and help improve lives. And it's so needed. And we, you know, after a year of being on Skype together, we just met face to face today for the first time ever.
That must have been quite an incredible experience. I mean, I met you too, Ash and Tracy, and you were so excited, Ash, weren't you? Waiting to meet this woman. I remember seeing you and your face, and you just kept looking at the door, looking at the door. Is she coming? Is she here? Is she here? Yeah, it must have been quite something to all get together. I've experienced that with talking to people online, but yes, the actual when you get to meet them, when they're there in front of you, it's very special. Something else, isn't it?
Yeah, very special. So I feel very fortunate that I get to help people like Tracy and Ashley, and my big passion now is to really help millions. Or I don't know how many type ones are online. there's only, they say maybe 10 million in the US, or I mean in the world. In the US, it's anywhere from 1 to 2 million. Sometimes I hear 3 million, but people don't really know. The reality is, hands down, the education for type 1 is very poor. And standard conventional recommendation is eat as many carbs as you want and take more insulin. And this is devastating. This is absolutely, it creates such poor health for the children. It's very dangerous because they have to give such high doses of insulin that then you can't necessarily know exactly how much and when you need the insulin. You're always guessing when you give a shot. And if you give too much insulin, you can go into a coma and die. You know, and then the high blood sugar levels are creating blindness, heart disease, kidney failure, strokes, gangrene, Alzheimer's, moodiness. If a child's blood sugar level is high, they have recognized that you can be excused from taking an exam because the brain doesn't work. So here they are saying eat as many things as you want and take as much insulin as you want. But the reality is they're at risk for dying from a low and slow death from highs. Now, I understand why they say that, though, because before that, it was an incredibly strict diet. I weighed and measured every bite of food I ate my entire childhood. And so eating disorders are much higher risk of eating disorders when you have type 1. And so their justification for why they say, oh, you want to eat like all the rest of the kids is to avoid that. But it's still, you know, it's just pendulum has swung from strict to nothing, and neither extreme is good.
Perhaps you could explain exactly how it works, how the whole system works with dealing about your food intake.
Oh, sure.
And judging how much insulin you need to inject and when, and how the whole system works.
Well, I normally work with people for 3 months to answer that question. But the conventional doctors will say, count your carbs. And for every one unit, or for every approximately 15 grams of carb you eat, you need one unit. And 99% of type 1s, that's the full education that they get. So if you eat 30 carbs, you eat 2 units. 45 carbs, 3 units, like that. That's it. But the reality is, you also need a background dose of insulin. That's the first thing that I worked with Tracy with on day one, because your liver is actually putting glucose into your body all day long. So you actually need, I did a 7-day water fast once, and I still had to take insulin, because you absolutely have to have insulin to be alive. And your liver is actually feeding you glucose. Insulin, I like to say, is the pickup truck for glucose. Once you eat, the glucose is absorbed into your bloodstream, and then insulin is needed to pick up that glucose and feed it to your cells, right? So without insulin, the glucose stays in the bloodstream, which is not good, and your cells starve, which is not good. The first thing I work with patients is to just figure out their baseline need, which is to counteract the liver's glucose. So we haven't even talked about dosing for food yet. You have to figure out that first. Then we're going to look at, there's many aspects to how to dose a meal. Carbohydrate is one of them. But if you're going to have a banana versus black beans, it could be the same amount of carbs, but you're going to have to change the timing, right? Because what's a banana going to do? Immediate spike. A black bean, not immediate spike. So you have to think about glycemic index. Then if you're just eating protein, protein itself actually can raise blood sugar. So many patients think they can just have, you know, all this protein and they don't have to worry about it. They have one little piece of bread and they think, oh, I only need one unit because I only had 15 grams from the bread. But protein actually can turn into glucose. So I have to teach patients how to dose for protein, which is very different than dosing for carb. And then actually fat can have an effect on glucose as well. So that is just food. The size of your meal also is dependent on your dose, because the timing, right? You could have this many carbs, but if you have this huge holiday meal, it's going to be digesting for hours. So you're going to have to spread out your dose over hours, right? So that's just food. Stress raises blood sugar. Getting sick raises blood sugar. Hormonal swings raise blood sugar. Then there's just life. Insulin can go bad, can get too hot, and then people are dosing and they go high and they don't know why. Well, your insulin was in the sun, right? Absorption, when people dose a really big amount, if they're eating a lot of carbs, absorption from day to day can vary, especially the bigger dose of insulin you give at any one time, the less consistent the absorption. So these are all the fine-tuning details that I teach patients that truly, I don't see, yeah, it's life-changing. Because all we're told is dose one unit for 15 grams of carb, and if you go low, eat sugar.
It sounds mind-blowingly complicated, I have to say.
I mean,
I'm feeling overwhelmed and stressed just listening to the thought of, you know, the thought process I'm going through. And I'm just, you know, with everything you're saying, I can just see potential issues with all of it. You know, I talk to people about not completely trusting labels, and they're, you know, they're always going to be an average of the contents. I always cite the packs of bacon that I buy, you know, and it lists how much protein and how much fat is in there. Well, that's an average. I always pick the ones that's got a load of fat on it and leave the ones that are really lean. But see, but you can't tell me the macros are the same. The macros that are written on the nutritional information on that pack, well, they can't possibly be the same. And that, you know, and that's the same for everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, what size is your banana? And it can vary. An apple can be different apples at different sweetnesses and when it's harvest season. I mean,
exactly.
So presumably it's only going to be a sort of a guesstimate
every time. And this exactly is where low carb comes in. So the biggest driver of high blood sugar is carbs. So you can see this whole array of conditions and variables that we have to manage every day, that if you just reduce your carbs, your job's going to be a lot easier. It's still a lot of work and I still go up and down, but my life is so much easier. If I'm going to have a chicken salad, I'm like, probably need a unit. I might need another unit later. If I have pasta and bread, I'm like, oh gosh, do I need 10 units now? And then I wonder if they all hit at once and then I go low. So, but then what if I go high later? Well, then if I have a high carb meal, I will only have it at lunch, because there's so many variables for hours after you eat carbs that you have to be on your toes to manage. Are you going to go low? Are you going to go high? If you go low, you have to eat more sugar. If you go high, you need more insulin. Dinner is always, you know, if there's ever, I allow myself treats every now and then, and I try to always have them at lunch, because then I don't have to worry. But yeah, low carb, it just makes sense. And this is not conventional medicine.
Well, that's the thing. Logically, to me, it absolutely makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Just thinking about those highs and
swings,
lows, that anything you eat is going to cause a rise of some kind.
Yes.
But instead of having those, you know, nice rolling hills,
you
know, you have these huge, great mountain spikes that, and I can see how very difficult it would be to treat those, because as we were just saying, it's really difficult to get the right dose.
Yes.
And whenever you go up high, you're going to come down really low. So tricky. Logically, it just seems the perfect way to eat.
Diabetes camp, summer camps for kids. They completely embrace eat whatever you want. I've been to diabetes. I mean, I'm on staff at diabetes camps because it is such a huge life changer. But unfortunately now I have to kind of, you know, hesitate before I recommend them, because all my families are low carb, right? And then they send their kid to diabetes camp and they serve them every carb you can imagine.
I was going to say, with the swings, the blood swings there, it's not only, you know, what, like for a parent having to watch those blood swings and correct them and change them and do it. It also does mentally challenge and physically challenge your bodies. Ashley, if going into lows, it's so draining, it's exhausting. And even the highs, the body goes into stress mode, as you've taught us. After you go into, like, once you pass blood glucose level 10, the body starts going into this mode where it's going to pee out the calories because it wants to get rid of that sugar that's now in the system. That sends the body's doing things that it's got to, quick, we've got to get rid of this, we've got to get rid of this. And those highs and lows, those swings, it's not just the bloods that you worry about, it's mentally too, because they, you know, she feels low, she can't go and play, she can't. And then when she's high, she still can't go play, she can't go swimming, she can't concentrate, and she gets frustrated with herself. So it really upsets me when I see these bloods, because I know from a mum's side of things what those little children are going through, or anybody with type 1, watching them go from a high to a low to a high.
And that is the majority of type 1s. That's how they live their life.
Very tricky. And what about you, Ash? How have you adjusted to this complete life change? And it must have been a massively steep learning curve.
Yeah, sort of.
Sounds like you're the kind of person that really just takes it in your stride.
I kind of just go with the flow, you know. Yeah,
she's got a good mama, helps her out.
Yes, mom does a lot of work. She tells me when to do insulin and how much I need most of the time at school, and whenever I'm home alone or something like that. I normally do it myself, but whenever mom is near me or around me, she will tell me what to do.
That's so great.
And so specifically, what was your involvement with these guys? Just educating them a better way to be doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I work virtually. So anybody listening, they can find me on my website and sign up for a free call. And in the free call, I assess, are we a good fit? And then I do a series of Skype or phone calls. So I do a minimum of 3 hours with patients. So that could be 3 1-hour calls or 6 30-minute calls. I think we did 6 1-hour calls or something like, yeah.
We did fortnightly 1 hour
sessions. 1 hour every two weeks. Yeah. I always encourage people to really invest in a minimum of 3 months of working with me, because in the past, I would give as much as I could in an hour and nothing, it was too overwhelming. Nobody, then we'd have our second appointment and it's like I just said everything again in appointment number two. So I've actually changed it to 30-minute calls for majority of people now, and I spread them out over 3 months. There's so much to digest.
And you need to adapt and practice what you've learned.
Absolutely.
And then come back and probably reinforcing those lessons, but then gradually learning new things.
Absolutely.
As you go.
And as a holistic physician, I am not only interested in how their blood sugar level is doing and that they totally understand insulin. I want to know how you're feeling and, you know, how are your bowel movements and what supplements are you on and what are you eating and are you exercising? I mean, I'm a holistic physician, which means I want to take care of the whole of you. And I became the kind of physician I always wished I found, which I still have never found. I want somebody that takes care of all of me and asks me how I'm doing. Maybe have an appointment where we don't even talk about blood sugars. We just talk about, oh my gosh, this is a lot. It's overwhelming. I know. You know, and it's so beautiful that I have type 1 because I have that immediate bond with my patients. There's a lot to work on.
That's what I loved about Jodi so much, is that she could connect with me, talk to me about everything, but she also could connect with Ashley, which is something I can't do. That's this little small part. I'm not a type 1 diabetic, and it was so nice to have someone that I trusted to be able to be there for my daughter. And the best thing, I still remember clearly, I think it was about session 3, we were cold, which is not cold to Dr. Jodi because she has snow. We don't in Canberra, so we're all rugged up in our blankets. And Ash was just sort of sitting there. And the last 15 minutes of our session, it was all about, Jodi just brought it into Ashley. How are you feeling? How's school? We were talking about some stress levels at school. It wasn't really anything to do with diabetes, but Jodi made it all about Ash, which was just perfect because that's what it needs to be. I mean, I need to learn. I really do. I'm the mum. But Jodi remembers that Ashley's the one with type 1. Ashley is the one dealing with this day in, day out. You know, I can go and have a shower and forget about it for 5-10 minutes. These two can't. It's always there. And that was what was really special for me, is that Ashley has someone she can turn to that I trust that can help her with any stage of her life.
Sounds like a really important resource you offer.
Thank you.
We were talking a little bit before we started recording. Can we talk about that?
This
new Facebook group and the potential that has to reach so many more people.
Right.
Because obviously you deal with people, as you've explained, working one-on-one, but the power of the internet is often to be able to extend that reach massively. So perhaps you could tell us a bit about that because it sounds really exciting.
I'm very excited. And it is. I'm so passionate about helping people really, you know, have the transition and the transformation that Ashley and Tracy have in just a year or two. I've had patients that have had this transformation as well, but they had diabetes for 40 years and it took them 40 years to find me. So year after year of just hearing how much my work has changed lives, I was like, I need to reach the masses. So I've spent actually the last 2 years recording videos and making handouts, and then I had to re-record all the videos, and then I made some new handouts, and I've put my heart and soul into these online courses, and they're actually available now on my website.
Which is?
It's Dr. Jodi ND, and it's, so that's DrJody N as in naturopathic, and then D as in doctor. There is a membership tab there. All the courses are there. I have a course on getting off the blood sugar roller coaster, what to eat and how to dose, mastering your blood sugar level with exercise, how to stay positive and avoid burnout, because that's a whole nother topic when it's just like too much and people give up. the three essentials of lowering your A1C. I do group calls. I also have an annual retreat in Sun Valley, Idaho. But yeah, the Facebook thing is going to be launching in, I think it's March 14th, which is like in a week. And it's basically a monthly subscription for $20 a month. And you get access to all of my courses. There's two live calls a month. And I do a weekly live video. And I can't give you details to where to go because the page doesn't exist yet. But if you go to my website.
Presumably, yeah, there will be updates on your website.
Yeah, well, if you just go Jody A. Stanislaw on Facebook, that's my Facebook page. And then drjodynd.com is my website. So you can definitely find me in those two places already.
And then presumably with this Facebook group, you're going to be building a community.
Yes.
And that's the beauty of it. That's what I love about coming to conferences like this is the community and making that connection. And obviously you're going to be there to help and teach people, but there'll be that camaraderie and the community where the people can help each other as well.
Exactly. And I'm sure Ash and Trace feel like, I mean, I feel like I've already known them for a year because I have known them for a year. Although we just physically met today, it certainly doesn't feel like we just met today. You know, that's the beauty of the internet. And so that would be my goal. You know, my goal is to have 1,000 people in that membership program within the next 3 months and then 2,000. I mean, given the millions of type ones, my goal is that it's that easy.
1 million by the end of the year.
Yeah, that's it. Right.
That's your challenge.
Yeah, right. I'll take it. I dream big. So.
Well, it's been really wonderful talking to you three. My first ever four-way podcast.
So great.
And my youngest ever extraordinary woman.
14. I don't think we ever said her age.
Yeah, I'm 14. I was born December 31st, 2004.
I'm a December baby too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I traditionally wrap up the podcast with a top tip. So as I've got three of you, maybe I can get three top tips. Who wants to go first? So a tip for the listeners, it can be anything you like.
If you know anybody with type 1, please have them reach out to me.
As a parent of a type 1, don't be afraid to keep asking questions and keep learning.
That's good.
But just because you're a parent, just because you may not be a doctor or a specialist, that doesn't mean that you can't learn.
Tracy, you know more than most endocrinologists now.
As a teenager and a type 1, what would your top tip be? Think of it this way. What would your top tip be to fellow teens who had just had a similar diagnosis?
Try low carb. Low carb is the best. It's healthy, that one. And also for type 1 diabetics, it's easier to manage bloods.
So yeah, just like we were saying earlier, it actually just makes your life easier.
It makes sense.
It tastes so good.
It really does.
It's much easier for Ashley when she's at school because she's by herself. She's dealing with things, you know, going in and out of class. She doesn't have to add up these copious amounts of carbs. She just actually, most of the time at school, she just, what we call like sugar surfing. She just eats morning tea and lunch and then she just watches her CGM. I mean, thank God for CGMs.
A glucose monitor.
She just watches her glucose monitor and she just doses accordingly as she needs to throughout the day.
Yep.
And it makes her life, she can just be a teenager and bop along as her bloods are bopping along.
Well, fantastic. Thank you all very much. It's been a great pleasure and wonderful to be sat here with you all, not just across a computer screen, which is what I usually do. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman podcast Instagram and Facebook pages and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's quote is from Theodore Zeldin. Conversation is a meeting of minds with different memories and habits. When minds meet, they don't just exchange facts, they transform them, reshape them, draw different implications from them, engage in new trains of thought. Conversation doesn't just reshuffle the cards, it creates new cards. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.